Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello and welcome to another Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our chance to explore what's going on in the world of technology from a blind and partially sighted perspective. If you want to get in contact with us, please do. You're more than welcome. techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. We always love to hear from you. Voice notes or written messages are always welcome. This week, we'll be hearing about some updates to the shopping website InnoSearch. Jackie Brown has been putting a new pair of wireless headphones through their paces. And of course, we'll be sharing our thoughts and reactions on the latest Apple event. Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran are joining me this week. Obviously, Apple was the big news of the week, and we will get into that. But anything else caught your eye this week, Jackie?
Yeah, two quick things. The BrailleSense firmware is being updated. I've been beta testing it along with quite a few others for a while. So 3.0 is imminent, and it isn't a secret to say that there is going to be a new web browser. Let's face it, the one that came with the BrailleSense originally was not good, but the new version is a lot better. And there has also been a lot of updates to the word processor. So there's a lot more that you can do with page layout and things like that. So that is imminent. And the other quick thing to mention is that the Orbit player is due to land, I believe, in the next week or two, shipping permitted. And both Graham Longley of Aspire Consultancy and Steve Nutt of Computer Room Services are going to be selling it. And the price with VAT exemption is $249. Obviously, if you have to pay VAT, it'll be $300. But that's not a bad price for a bespoke Daisy player that does all sorts of stuff. So watch for that coming out and get your orders in if that's what you want.
That's just what I was going to say, you know, because we had Venkatesh Jari on a couple of weeks ago talking about the Orbit player. And I've never really been interested in these kind of Daisy players, you know, the Victor Reader Stream or the Sense player, but I don't know, at that price I'm kind of tempted. You know, it might be quite nice to listen to podcasts or books without the noise of your phone, so tempted. Yeah,
the reason why I like it, why I like those players, is if you want to, you've got buttons there straight away. If you want to pause something, if somebody phones you or somebody comes to your door or you've got to jump up quickly and do something, I like the idea of just having physical buttons. You can quickly put a bookmark in without faffing around on the screen of your phone to do it. I know some people say, well, look, you know, you've got a phone, so use it. And, you know, I do everything on my phone kind of thing. But I do think there is a place for a bespoke players in the arena, but having said that, I don't think the Victor Reader Stream 3 was as good as it could have been. I think there's been a lot of bugs, but that does happen with these things. But I am looking forward to seeing the Orbit player because I think it's reasonably priced, and from what I've read of people in America having it already, they're really pleased with it. So that's an interesting one to look out for, and the price is you know, reasonable as well, I guess.
Yeah, well, look forward to hearing more about that as it comes to the UK. We are hoping, emphasis on hoping, no promises, but we are hoping to get a demo unit to review of that. So, yeah, definitely keep your eyes or I guess your ears out for that one, I should say. Natalie, anything from you?
Nothing too exciting. Just a couple of things I thought I might flag. So one of them is, don't know if anybody still uses Facebook Messenger, but I recently found what to me looks like a ghost notification. So I get, it says there's one new message. When I go onto the app, I can't for the life of me find it. And I got my brother to have a look, and he said it was one of these sort of Facebook page group things that I've been added to. And that was, there was a message on that. He got rid of it for me and it's popped right back in. So to be honest with you, I don't actually have a solution for that, but it was kind of one of those ones to say to people, if you've got the same kind of ghost notification going on, that's what it is. And I think my solution is going to be to delete the app. Because I don't think I ever actually use it anymore. I think I'm all on WhatsApp and just normal text with all my friends. And the other thing I was going to mention was Amazon. If anybody else is having problems with Amazon saying current location all over the time, sorry, all over the page and all the time, is very frustrating. And again, I don't have a direct solution, but the workaround I have found, which seems to help me quite a bit, is to use my A lady to do my first search, as it were. So I'll say to her, I'm shopping for, I know, pegs, or I'm looking for a new whatever it is. And then she'll give me three or four options. I'll add them to the basket. Usually, I actually add all of them. And then it's just those three or four I have to look at. Whereas trying to do a search, which I have to say, I think has been ruined somewhat on Amazon by sponsored results and just seem to repeat and get on my nerves. And I'm more likely to find what I want that way. Like I say, just saves a bit of a headache and time. Doesn't always work, but I thought I'd share that in case that helps anybody else.
That's a really good tip, actually. Because Amazon lately has been terrible with that current location. Yeah, every time you scroll, or even when you're not scrolling, if you're just on the page, current location, current location, current location. It's impossible to get to like the, and also just in general, how hard is it to get to the description of a product where you've got to get past the, you might like this, and then they're all headings.
What I often find actually is I switch my rotor to form controls and I flick it through form controls because that will take you to top results. Sorry, is it top results or top review or something like that? And that's actually where the description is because I find a lot of the time description doesn't even have a heading.
Oh, well, there you go.
Are you both using your PC then or your phones?
This is the app, yeah.
Sorry, I should have clarified, Jackie, iPhone.
Okay. I because I was thinking I'm not getting that, but that will be because I use my PC when I'm on Amazon and I'm looking for something. I just find it just as quick to type in search. And I'm not getting that, but what I have found is that there's a lot of sponsored links now on the page, mixed in with the results that they give you. And I think the page has become so cluttered now. So it's really, really frustrating when developers, just do not follow the accessibility guidance properly.
I guess this is why we need websites like InnerSearch. Yeah, stay tuned because they've got something. It's interesting actually because Amazon do have this this other AI assistant. Obviously they've got Lady A, but built into the Amazon app at least. I don't know if it's on the PC, but there's a tab called Rufus. I've never used it. I don't know why.
I've used them once or twice. A lot of the time I find it useless because I've already read the description and it repeats the description. But once or ti twice actually, just in the past week, I've used it and it was helpful. And it was, I'll just give the example. I was looking for a hair mask, sort of a hair treatment thing that you could leave in. And what I really wanted to know was, I'd read the description, I knew it was roughly what I wanted, was could you leave it in overnight? And I just typed in the word overnight and then hit search. And Rufus came back with something of the description doesn't mention it. But I then used the open, was it, there's a button called show related reviews. And that told me what I needed to know. And what I found more interesting was, sorry, the first time I typed in, can this be used overnight? And then the second time on a different product, I just typed in the word overnight and it went straight to the right answer for me. So I don't know if it's a bit like some of these other AI things where it learns a bit as you go. But I have to say, largely, I find it, if you've already read the description, I don't find it that useful.
Well, there you go. A few tips there if you're struggling with the Amazon website. Well, I saw some news last week, which I'm really excited about. I can't take advantage of it, but I'm excited about it. And this is the multi-line Braille display support in JAWS. It's now out of beta, by the looks of it.
Oh, it is indeed.
Yeah, I thought you'd be excited by this. So the September update to JAWS, multi-line support has been there for a while, but just in beta format. So you've had to enable it, and obviously it's beta, so there's been a few issues with it, I imagine. But this is expanding, so it supports the Monarch and the Dotpad at this stage, I believe. But the thing that really got me about this, obviously multi-line Braille is exciting anyway, but JAWS has got a feature called Split Braille. So this allows you to kind of separate your Braille display into two. So you could have one side, in my case, I've got a 40-cell display, so I could have 20 cells displaying, say, the document that I'm currently working on, and then the other 20 cells displaying some notes from another screen or another document. Kind of like sighted people having two screens. And you can do this same thing with multi-line. Now, that is really exciting, I think. That's.
That sounds super useful, actually.
Yeah, it is, because it means that you could have your Monarch or Dotpad or whatever you have, whatever your multi-line is, you could have one of them attached to your PC by USB, and then the other one you could then you could have a split with your phone as well. You could pair your phone using Bluetooth, and then you could have half of it with your phone if you're working on something, and then the other half on your computer with someone. So it is, I mean, it is incredible.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that as well. That's the closest we're going to get, I think, to the way that sighted, because a lot of sighted people, especially nowadays, work with two monitors, two screens. I think this is the closest we're going to get. I mean, I say mine because I do love split view, but I find it quite limiting because although I described it as 20 cells each way, that's just the easiest way to describe it. It's actually not, because you've got a little divider there, which I think takes up two cells. So you know which is one side and which is the other. So it's not quite 20 cells each way. It's a bit less than that. And I think for a 40 cell Braille display, that doesn't leave you much really. It's good if you've got an 80 cell display, even better if you've got like nine lines or whatever it is.
I do find it somewhat ironic that we spent a long time getting things smaller and more compact with phones and laptop, computers becoming laptops, phones becoming smaller, flip ups and slide ups and all that kind of thing. And now we're going the other way as people add more and more gadgets and gizmos to their devices. You need a whole work surface for what would have just sat on your lap. Or in case of like the smartphones now, you need a handbag for what would have fitted in your pocket.
It is exciting. I'm very excited by I know everyone moans about the price, myself included, but I am excited about multi-line Braille for things like this. All right, well, cheers guys. Stick with us for another week. This is Tech Talk.
Now on RNIB Tech Talk, it's time to get a little update from a guest we've had on previously. Patrick Long is the co-founder and CEO of InnerSearch AI, whom we have spoken to towards the end of 2024. Today, Patrick is here to give us a bit of an update on InnerSearch and what they are currently working on. Patrick, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here on Tech Talk. Thanks so much for having me, Hubert.
For people who may not be aware, can you give us a bit of a snapshot as to what InnerSearch AI is and what you guys do?
We're building an accessibility first digital marketplace designed specifically for those who are blind and low vision. So, as some of you may know, essential services today, like online shopping, booking travel, or even ordering groceries, can be very frustrating. The screen reader oftentimes does not work well on complex websites, and a lot of times you're just really frustrated by that. It's challenging, and sometimes you even need sighted help. So that is where InnerSearch comes in, right? With just a simple voice command or navigating using your screen reader, our platform makes it very easy, very accessible to access over 500,000 stores and more than a billion products all at your fingertips. So you can very easily navigate, no endless menus, barriers, just independence. Recently, we've partnered with organizations like the NFB in the United States and Be My Eyes so that we can expand more quickly and grow and share our product.
Now, we will talk about a very exciting feature you're working on to do with web browsing in a minute, but what have been some of the latest developments with the shopping platform itself?
For the shopping platform, of course, we are always getting new feedback, right? And so there's been lots of improvements on the products, the way the products are listed. We also now have a phone line. So for those who don't want to buy using their computer, they can also dial a number and have InnoSearch shop for them there. We also have flight booking that was also added. So now you can book any domestic and also international flight. Very seamless, very easy. And if you need guide dog support or additional accommodations, you can also request that as well.
Now, the next thing I want to ask you about is your co-browse feature. Can you give us a little bit of an explanation as to what this is?
Yeah, so co-browse, you can think of it as a voice AI agent. Think of it like a friend sitting next to you as you're browsing a website. So imagine you're browsing using your screen reader, and for some reason, some element of the web page is just not accessible, right? You can activate co-browse using a hotkey control shift backslash, and immediately your co-browse buddy can answer whatever you want for you just through your voice. So you can tell it, you can ask it what page I'm on, what's the layout of this web page, and it'll break down every element of the page, as well as all the functions of that web page itself. If you're looking for a specific item, let's say you're on a shopping website, you can ask it, I'd like to shop for headphones. And the co-browse tool will actually identify where on that web page it needs to click, type in exactly what you're looking for, and make the search for you. So it's like a friend that's sitting next to you. You can chat with, and they can help you browse the internet.
Is this something that web developers will have to approach you to get implemented on their website, I presume?
Yes, so we're doing a pilot at the moment, but it's a very simple process. You can just email us support@innosearch.ai, and then we can add the co-browse buddy to your website. It's very simple. It's just about one line of JavaScript code. It's very easy to add.
These are some fantastic features. I mean, I'm liking the co-browse feature, especially with AI user agents slowly becoming introduced by other companies. It's great to see you guys coming on as well. So let's talk about some more future plans. Obviously, I imagine you're focusing on co-browse at the moment, but can you give us a snapshot of some of the work you've got coming up in the next few months maybe?
Yeah, so we're always looking for new ways to make our services better. We're improving co-browse significantly to be able to make co-browse even more versatile and be able to navigate more websites. So right now, co-browse is integrated on InnoSearch, but again, we're looking for more partners to integrate co-browse to. We're always improving the different actions co-browse can take. So right now, co-browse does very well when helping navigate users through checkout for items, but we want to make sure it's very versatile, can help people fill out forms, just really be that buddy that you need when you're browsing the internet. So lots more improvements to co-browse coming up. We're also looking into expanding our travel portal. So right now, we currently have flights. But soon we're looking into adding trains and other different types of transportation. Also, and this is only in the US for now, we're expanding to food and grocery delivery. So for our other countries, the UK, Canada, and Australia, we'll be looking for partners for us to grow our food delivery service in your locality as well. So a lot coming on the horizon. We're working really hard to make sure the web is more and more accessible for you.
And if people would like to try out Innersearch, the shopping platform itself, or indeed contact you to provide feedback or suggestions or ask questions, how can they do these things?
So you can reach us at innosearch.ai. That's INNO search, SEARCH dot AI. We also have a support email that's monitored very often, support@innosearch.ai. So you can access all our services through our web portal. But also, if you need any support regarding your orders, new products, new suggestions, or you just like to work with us, right, get co-browse on your website, get us to attend one of your conferences. We're here. We're here to help. We're here to listen and would love to hear from you.
Oh, that is fantastic. I'm sure we will catch up with you again soon when you have more new features, but there's plenty to try out already as it is. So if you do end up giving Innersearch a go, or indeed trying co-browse, do let us know your thoughts here as well, and we will happy pass them on to Patrick. The usual email address is techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But for now, Patrick Long, co-founder and CEO at Innersearch AI, thank you very much for joining us here on RNIB Tech Talk.
Thanks so much for having me, Hubert, and thanks so much for the opportunity to share.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
So Apple had their latest event last week, the awe dropping event. I did like the people trying to unpack and trying to decide what the name meant. I still don't really know. I don't think it meant anything, to be honest. What were your guys' initial thoughts on this? I've got my opinions, but I'll go to you two first. What did you think?
Well, I don't know too much about the software at the moment. They didn't seem to speak much about the software at the event, I believe, but it's the hardware they have are going to be releasing a new watch, a new watch Pro, I believe, and a new watch SE. So I think there are three different types of watch 11 coming out, and some earbuds 3, I believe, and they're going to have a couple of new features in them, and of course the range of phones. So we're going to go with 17 Pro, the 17 Air, the 17, and of course the 17 Pro Max. So there's, I think, four different phones this year, and the colors of the iPhone 17 Pro are deep blue, silver, and wait for this, cosmic orange.
Cosmic orange.
Now, I've heard that the cosmic orange is massively bright.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure who that is aimed at, but the pre-order started on the 12th of September. So I think the release date is the 19th.
Yeah, so that's when they'll become available.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Natalie, what did you think? Did you have any highlights or anything you're excited about?
What jumped out at me, of all things, actually, was the AirPods. And Jackie just mentioned that they had one or two new features mentioned. And the one that I thought was interesting was, I think it said instant or real life language translation. And I thought, that's interesting because that's something that the Meta Ray-Bans recently introduced.
Yeah.
So it's clearly a bit of friendly competition going on. And I've been interested in AirPods for a while because actually I don't like the latest version of the AirPods because they have those rubber things in them, they sort of go in your ear. So the AirPods I have are deliberately a couple of generations old. But I was interested in the last round of AirPods release that they could be used as certified hearing aids. And I thought that was a really cool addition. So now adding the translation thing, And I think the there's a couple of other things. One of them was so heart rate monitoring if you're doing workouts. I thought these are actually quite useful. I have to say I don't really understand the thing with Apple Watches and being able to track all your health stats and everything. It's just so not my thing. I had an Apple Watch for a while and I nearly chucked it into the sea when I was on holiday once because I got so fed up with it, talking relentlessly because I think I accidentally got the wrong generation, not knowing it, so accidentally out of ignorance, that it would work on a sensor basis. So if I took somebody's arm, it would just constantly tell me the time so that when I actually went to check it, the battery had died. And I wanted to kill it. So I
You
have to
can
say
turn
I'm
that
sorry.
off, that.
I love my iPhone, but I would never go back to an Apple Watch.
Fair enough. I think it's the Wacom wrist raise. That's not easy to say. Setting at that, and you can turn that off. But yeah, I know what you mean. That is an annoying feature. That's the first thing I did when I got my watch. Turn that straight off.
If I think my one, the like I say, the generation I had didn't have the turn off as an option. But what I did find useful was if anybody gets the Apple updates, and I think if you've got an iPhone, then you get them whether you like it or not, is I clicked on one of the links for iPhone 17 just to read a bit more about it. And at the bottom of the page, it said compare with. So I have an iPhone 13 mini at the moment. So it's the bottom of the page said compare with your iPhone 13 mini. And I don't know if it had already opened an Apple store or if it's already an Apple store. But anyway, at this point, it was definitely an Apple store. And I found it really interesting because it wasn't brilliantly formatted, but I could follow it. And it did a direct comparison. So the 17 it has this kind of display, your 13 mini has this one. And it did it directly line for line. And I really liked that because what I was interested in, and I kind of hinted at it earlier, was the size. So as I just said, I've got a mini phone because I can't see the screen. I don't feel the need to have a giant screen. I have relatively small hands. I like to be able to hold my phone in one hand and text as I walk with using one hand and not have to get two hands out and drop my cane on the floor. So I found that really useful to be able to do a direct size comparison. And in case everybody's interested, the difference between an iPhone 17 and an iPhone 13 mini is about an inch bigger in both directions. But I thought, again, I'd flag that as an interesting feature if people want to check it out without having to go into an Apple store, which will be heaving on the 19th of
Yes.
September.
I wanted to see this ordering process on the day, how you know that you can pre-order on Friday, the 12th of September at 1 o'clock and get everything ready so that you can just race through to checkout. So I thought, right, okay, I wasn't planning at all to buy an upgrade this year. I've got a 15 Pro and I really thought I would wait. But when I went on to the Apple Store to have a look at the specs and everything, I thought I might just pick the 17 Pro just to run through to see what happens because I knew I wouldn't have to pay for it if I didn't want it. So I went through the procedure that they have for pre-ordering, and of course you can't pre-order until 1 o'clock on the 12th. But I went through and I thought I'll have a look at the trade-in, see what they would give me. Now my iPhone is always in a case anyway, and it's a front and back case, so it's completely covered. So I knew that you know it is in really good condition. So I opted. I thought I'm going to try and see what happens if I go through for trade-in. Well, they were going to offer me £400 for my phone, and I thought, well, really does save, if I'm going to buy one, it saves me trying to sell it privately. You know how people can be sometimes, always the battery working. Does it do this? Does it do that? So I thought, no, I'll go for the trade option. So it wanted a couple of details, which I ticked the boxes. Then it wanted my phone serial number, and I know where to get that. You go into settings, accessibility, and about, and rather, sorry, not accessibility. You go into settings,
General.
yeah, general and about, and I got the serial number and I put that in the edit box. Your serial number is invalid. So I tried all sorts of ways of putting it in, no caps, all caps. I could not get it to go in on the PC. So I just left it. And I thought, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll try on the app. So I went to the Apple store. And of course, is it the phone that you are using that you want to trade? Yes. And of course, it just accepted it. So I've ended up pre-ordering one. And I've ended up
Of
pre-ordering the
course.
17 Pro, really without much intention of doing it. But it really annoyed me because I just could not get the trade in. It would not accept my serial number. It didn't matter what I put in on the PC on the Apple store there. But it did work on the app. So yeah.
With the announcements, I mean, one thing that got me was, particularly with the Apple Watch. A lot of the feature Apple didn't make this very clear in the presentation. I wonder why. But a lot of the features coming to the Apple Watch and the AirPods, for that matter, they will also work on going back to the Series 9. So the Series 9, Series 10, and the Ultra 2, which was the previous generation of the Ultra. So things like the sleep scores that you can track, blood pressure monitoring, and notifications around hypertension. You can still get them 3 generations back, so it does make you wonder, is there much, apart from battery life and maybe slightly faster, I don't know if there's much reason to upgrade your watch if you're a couple of generations old. I mean, I've got a Series 9 and I'm quite happy with it. I'll get most of the new features, I think, by the looks of it.
I don't have a watch at all. I only saw the first version. I've seen them in the shop. I've had a look at them, but I got the first iteration when it first came out to play with. Somebody had one and lent me. It does nothing for me at all. I've got to be honest. I've never really wanted, because I use my phone and it's always with me. I've never really seen the point in having a watch. So it just doesn't, and I wouldn't wear the AirPods because I like over ear headphones or on ear headphones. So I wouldn't buy the AirPods either. But I mean, I'm sure if people do use them and the watch, that they're obviously gonna want to buy it and justify. But for me, it's the phone really that I'm interested in the most. It's the thing that I use a lot, and I know they've really gone up in price this year. They start at 256 as well, which means my existing phone's 128, and that's fine. But they've jumped as entry level 256, so that's really quite a jump, and it's a jump in price as well.
I have to say, I think, Callum, you make a good point about Apple in general, because I am a fan of Apple, and I think a lot of people are. But I do think sometimes when they release a new phone, or new bit of kit, and they talk about how great it is for various reasons, actually, when you drill down into the detail, and you do have to drill a little bit, is actually the software update that has brought these improvements. And most of your handsets or your devices, whatever it is it's referring to, will get that and will have the same benefit. So, like you say, apart from maybe there's a big thing on screen quality and camera quality, which for obvious reasons personally I just couldn't really care less about, and battery life. Which again, if you often have the screen curtain on, which I do, your battery life is probably pretty good. Then, actually, a lot of these cool new features come with the software not the handset. So you can probably get it anyway. And it is something that's worth flagging.
Yeah, it is. I know we haven't really gone much into the detail and the specs and the geeky stuff, but as the phones and the devices get into people's hands, we will, of course, be keeping an eye on that, definitely. Well, let us know. Are you excited by the announcements? Are you going to be upgrading? Have you pre-ordered, even if it is accidentally? Let us know. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
Now on RNIB Tech Talk, we return to the final part of our AI chatbot series. We've talked about what they are, how to use them effectively, and how to use them safely, and various, you know, trade-offs that sometimes, unfortunately, in this day and age, you have to make with technology. Today, we will look at the future of AI chatbots. I'm once again joined by Trevor Astrobe, and first of all, I'd like to kind of take a look at this. So, what do you think is next for AI chatbots in terms of future developments? I mean, especially for blind and partially sighted people, but in general as well.
I'm mostly excited about it for what it can offer blind and visually impaired people. I think the possibilities are immense, and I'm really looking forward to it. And, you know, it's a bit frustrating because you want things to proceed, even though AI is rapidly improving. You know, the possibilities are there, but they're not yet here, right? So some examples of things that I'm looking forward to are, like, say, the Meta glasses. I mean, I love them and I hate them. I love them in the sense that, you know, they could tell me what's around me, but I hate them in the sense that they'll say, sorry, I can't identify people. And, you know, there's certain things that they put in for safety reasons. But for a blind person, it's very important to us. We want to be able to know what, you know, what's around us and describe people. And the fact that it doesn't do that is frustrating. So I'd like to see that better. I think the biggest area that I see it giving us, so if you look at technology in the past, what it's provided is access to information. That's the bottom, the basics. All the technologies that have come in the last, whatever, 50 years of all help blind people get access to information. I think the big thing that AI can do is give us access to, say, navigation. This is the area that I'm really looking forward to. And it's starting to happen. There's, you know, technologies we hear about, guidance, the Meta glasses. But to have an assistant with you while you're navigating that can say, tell you things like, oh, hey, there's an obstacle up ahead. You're crossing the street. Maybe you're veering off into the traffic. It'll say, you know, go left, or, you know, just to give you little, you know, guidance, like a sighted person has by turn navigation. But having that assistant to be able to do, and that will come in time, but it's not here yet. And there'll be steps that we have to go through, sort of like the guidance will be a first step, and it's going to get better and better. But I think it's going to really give freedom and independence to blind people in the future. That's what I see anyway.
Yes, it's a concept that I don't know if it's officially been nicknamed like that, but I certainly refer to it as proactive AI.
Exactly, yeah.
Kind of video AI where you don't have to prompt it all the time, where if something changes in the camera view, it will actually tell you that it's changed. I mean, that would be kind of the ultimate thing. I mean, don't get me wrong, you still have to kind of not rely on it in life or death situations, granted. However, it would be a game changer.
For sure, so. Yeah. Or think about, like, so here's a use case that I have that I wish the glasses could do. So they're reactive, not proactive, as you said, right? So I'd like to be able to say, I take a taxi to work and back home. And I'd like it to tell me when my taxi has arrived, because I can't hear that. There's a lot of traffic. I can't hear the taxis. Now cars are mostly electric, so now you can't hear them, right? And so just being able for it to tell me when my taxi has arrived. But it can't. You know, you'd have to keep saying, is my taxi here? Is my taxi here? Is my taxi here? And that gets a bit tedious, you know.
Speaking of taxis, it's when I pick up a taxi from a busy area where it could pull up right in front of me, or it could pull up a few cars down, but you simply won't know. So be able to look around and go, I'm looking out for this car. You know, it's this color and it's this brand, and it's this make and model. Granted, you're asking a lot, but there's no reason to say it will not have that potential in the future. Now, I mean, you sort of answered this, but are there any particular kind of soon up and coming features or developments that you're most excited about when it comes to AI chatbots or AI in general?
Yeah, like this glasses technology, this is really great, right? So there's the Meta glasses now, there's the Giga glasses, which look very promising. I'm hoping they deliver on what they promise, because it really sounds like it's the Meta glasses with the training wheels taken off. So it'll kind of do the things that we want it to do that it won't do for us, like identify people. There's things that the technology is there to do now, but nobody's doing it yet. Partly it takes time and money to do it. But one thing that I think what AI would be very good for is an audio description, right? So the Gemini model from Google can already process video and you can ask it questions about it and it will give you answers. There's no reason why they cannot train that to automatically give you like an audio description. They can modify voices now. So it could take a video, do the voice over itself, not just give you a script, and do the audio description. And I'm looking forward to that happening, because the technology is there right now. It's just, it's not available, which means somebody has to do it, right? I think Google's a really good place to do it. It's their technology. They own YouTube. That's a great place to start it and perfect it, right? And then we should just be able to upload a video to Gemini and get back something with audio description.
When it comes to improving the usability of chatbots, how do you think AI chatbots can become more accessible and user-friendly? They are pretty much there already. I mean, you can already use hands-free just to talk to them through devices like the smart glasses and the kind of conversational apps. But is there a way they can become more accessible and user-friendly?
Combining the vision in real time, similar to the glasses. So if you don't have the glasses, you know, be able to use your phone. I understand Gemini can do this, but my Gemini doesn't do it. Other people tell me it works for them. So I don't know if it hasn't rolled out, but I tried the live Gemini and it tells me it can't access the camera, but other people tell me differently. So it's here or coming soon, I suppose. But yeah, that ability for it to look at your surroundings and have that vision as part of the conversation, right? So you could be asking it questions and say, oh yeah, by the way, what do you, you know, see over here, right? You, like, I don't know, say for a tourist, for example, you'd want both. You'd want to say, oh, hey, you know, I'm in this city right now. Do you can recommend any places to go? And then you're walking along and you say, well, just tell me what you see right now. And then it maybe give you a point of interest and you say, oh, well, give me some more information about that. That sounds like something very interesting. So yeah, combining vision and text is, I think, really something that I'm very interested in.
Now, I've already seen this mentioned, you know, AI user and the most important phrase, agent. So here's a question. Can AI chatbots eventually become literally your personal assistant where, you know, they can help you plan travel, they can help, you know, manage your emails, check your calendars, do these sorts of things? You know, how far do you think we are from that?
Pretty close. I mean, it's just starting now, right? There's, you know, GPT-5 now has access to your Gmail, and Gemini already did. I saw pop up on my Microsoft Copilot just today saying GPT-5 is also coming to Microsoft. So it's going to have access to your information for, you know, as we talked previously, for good or bad. And I'm sure you can control that. But yeah, it will be, we'll be able to, you know, access your email, access your calendar, you know, manage appointments for you, remind you of appointments. And like we were saying before, like the key is for it to be proactive, not reactive, right? To tell you things that are coming up, not just things that have happened. Is a big deal, and it's going to be incremental, right? So right now it's going to be fairly limited, but as time goes, it's going to be more and more powerful. Sort of like a smartphones. When smartphones came out, they were pretty limited, and they got better and better. And now, you know, we can't go anywhere without them, right? And I think AI is going to be that same thing. It's going to be part of you, whether your smartphone is the interface, it really doesn't matter, or glasses, how you interact with it is going to be irrelevant. But the thing is, you're going to have it with you all the time and it's going to become indispensable. So, and it'll just be a matter of time, and it'll be gradual. It's not going to be lights which we flick on and off. It's just going to become more and more part of our daily life.
Now, here's a question. We've talked about the benefits of chatbots, and it sounds like there's plenty to look forward to. But with things to look forward to, you have to be also realistic and look at the other side of things. Now, we've mentioned that although privacy is there to a certain extent, you have to have a bit of a trade-off with things sometimes. Do you have any particular concerns in terms of AI developments with chatbots and things like that? What sort of concerns do you have about its future?
Absolutely. Well, the future of my job, for one, people who work with information and are going to be sadly the first people whose jobs are going to be replaced by AI. I could, it's not there now, but I can see how AI could do my job at some point and probably better than me. So that's going to be a big issue. I think I'm at the point in my career that I'll probably be retired by the time that happens. But for others, it's going to be a serious issue. I tend to fall into the Ray Kurzweil view of things that, yes, it's going to displace a lot of jobs. Technology always does, but it tends to always create new jobs. And it's hard to see how new jobs can be created because you can say, well, AI can just do that new job. But it's historically that's we've always figured it out, and I'm optimistic in the sense that I think we will figure it out. Jobs will be lost and jobs will be gained.
Fantastic. And last but not least, a bit of advice. What would you say to people who, unlike me and you, are quite new to these chatbots and would love to give them a try but are quite apprehensive? What would your kind of bit of advice be?
Yeah, I'd say everybody should be learning this technology because it's the people. Back to the whole jobs thing, the people who know AI and use AI will be the last people standing in the sense because it'll still take some people, right? So say in my case, maybe AI can replace three people and one person can do that job to just manage the AI. That the person who's going to be left doing that job is the person who's good with the AI, right? And the people who are let go are the ones who didn't embrace it and who resisted it. So learning AI is going to be important to keeping your job and important to getting a job to be able to use AI. So I think it's very important skill to have and a skill to develop. And the best way to learn it is use it to do something that interests you, right? Use it to for your hobby, whatever that may be. Make it fun. Like it shouldn't be a chore for anybody. It should be there to help you. So try to find interesting ways to use it that interest you, and that's my advice.
We've learned plenty over this series, and I think, well, let's face it, conversations regarding AI will not stop here, so I'm sure we'll probably try and get you back on. But for now, thank you very much, Trevor Astrobe, for exploring the topic of AI chatbots here over this series here on RNIB Tech Talk.
Thank you very much. It was fun.
Today, I'd like to review a pair of very functional headphones. There's nothing wildly special about them, but I think some listeners might be interested to know what these do because they do have a dual purpose. So I'm talking about the EKSA H6 headphones. They are wireless because they've got a dongle that you plug into a hub or your computer, and they also pair using Bluetooth to your phone. So technically, you can actually switch from Bluetooth mode when you've got the headphones on to your PC if you've got the dongle plugged in as well. So that is really quite useful. Now, they're not highbrow headphones. They're not your Sonys or your Bose or your Sennheisers, any of the top brands. They are just a very functional pair of headphones that are comfortable. They're over ear, so they have lovely cushion pads, and I've got them in my hand. Although you won't be able to tell really from the sound. But I've got them here, and the headband is really nice. It's padded as well. And there is a boom microphone on the left-hand side. And the boom in a vertical position, you can just swivel it around, push it down, and then you are able to talk. Obviously, on Zoom calls, Teams calls, or just if you're on your PC listening to your screen reader, that's what these are really ideal for. And the fact that you can just switch to your phone, if you take an incoming call, you can press one of the buttons and you can receive your call. So they are really quite versatile. And as I say, that's why I say that they are functional. On the left-hand ear cup, there are three buttons. They're all tactile. The top one is the volume up, and it would also, if you press and hold it in for a couple of seconds, it would skip to the next track if you were listening to music. The middle button is a multifunction button, and I'll explain a bit about that in a minute. And the bottom button is your volume down button, and again, you can skip backwards if you hold it in if you're listening to music. Now, the middle button, as I say, is your multifunction button, and it has a dot on it as well. So they are very distinguishable. And what you do is press and hold the middle button for about 4 seconds to power on. And once they're on, if you want to turn it off, you just press and hold that button again. If you're on a call, you press once, I believe, to answer an incoming call. And if you press and hold it for a couple of seconds, then you can switch from your dongle mode to your Bluetooth mode if you have it paired to your phone or tablet. And that's really the advantage, I think, of these, is that very often you get headphones and you either have a headphones that connect via Bluetooth, or you have headphones with the dongle that are wireless. But I haven't seen headphones like this where you can switch to different devices just wearing the same headphones and pressing a button. And that can get itself into a pucker at times. I have seen it where I would be on my PC using JAWS, and then I would want to switch to Bluetooth to my phone. And when I press the button in the middle to switch, sometimes it takes it seems to get itself in a bit of a knot. And if it does do that, which is not often, but if it does, you can just press and hold the power button for 4 seconds, turn them off, and then turn it back on again. Now, when you power these headphones, there is a nice UK female voice that tells you that the power mode is on. And also, when you move the microphone, it will tell you whether you are muted or unmuted, which I think is quite useful. If you are on a Zoom call or you're on a Teams call, you can move the microphone up and down because it's like a little rotary arm that it sits on. And if you do that, it depends what state the arm of the microphone is in. But if you hold it vertically so that it runs alongside the casing of the headphones, then the mic, it says, is muted. And if you push it down like that, and it's pointing straight out as if you were speaking into it, then it says unmuted. So that's kind of useful. There is also another button quite close to the arm of the microphone. It feels a bit like a Braille B, the letter B in Braille, dots 1, 2. And actually, all it is a light. So if you press it, it will tell the user who's maybe looking at you through your camera. It will show a red light if you are engaged to somebody on the phone or in a call. So it does have that kind of visual aspect to it. The button is, as I say, like a B. It's tactile, but I personally wouldn't use that because I would know if I was engaged or not engaged on a phone. But that is what you can do with it. Now, these headphones are sort of plastic, really, with the padded casing on the ear cups and the headband. They are about 60 quid if you want to buy them from Amazon or somewhere online. What I really like about them is the fact that the wireless really does travel. So I've been at a Zoom event this week and I wanted to lie down for a while to rest my back in the evening. And I just plugged the dongle into my laptop, and then I went next door from my office with the headphones to our bedroom, and I was able to stretch out and listen to the Zoom event through the headphones. Really good signal. And Martin has a pair of these as well. Thanks to him that he introduced me to them. And he actually went right downstairs and right over to the furthest point of our house just to test how far they would travel when the dongle's in. And he said there was no dropout, no breakup or anything. So it really does travel. Obviously, you're going to get less on Bluetooth because Bluetooth won't go as far on your phone. But certainly the dongle is really, really useful. So these are, as I say, about £60. If you can get them a bit cheaper, all well and good. They are called EKSA H6. So that's EKSA H6. And as I say, in the box, you get a cable for charging, USB-C to USB-A, so you can charge them up. And you also get the little dongle. The only thing I would say about these headphones is that you don't get a battery report. Say on the Sony WH series, if you press a button, you can find out the battery power. You can't seem to do that on these. So I guess if you really want to know that you've got plenty of charge, and they do go up to 55 hours of use. So if you're not sure how much is left in the battery, then maybe charge them maybe once a week. It all depends, of course, on how often you use them. But I would say perhaps charge them up periodically. You might be able to get a battery percentage on Bluetooth if you've got them paired to your phone. But I'm not sure that I got that when I paired them with my iPhone. I didn't find a battery percentage on the actual headphones itself.
That's it from us this week. Thank you so much, as always, for being with us. If you like what you heard, or even if you didn't, I guess, email in, let us know, techtalk@rnib.org.uk if you've got any thoughts or comments or anything you want to share. We'd love to hear it. We'll be back with you, same time, same place, next week. But from me, Callum Stoneman, Jackie Brown and Natalie Curran, bye for now.
Bye.
Bye.
See ya.